How's it going? And welcome to episode 159 of On the Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On the Wire Pod. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin Hastings is at Hastings Kevin on the Twitter. We have a great show for you today. Kevin, just glad to be back at it. And, you know, we don't have as much injury news to talk about this week, but I still feel like we're still all kind of reeling from all of that. And I love seeing all the back and forth tweets about, you know, these actually aren't any worse than in the past, or it feels like it's worse. I think I fall on the side of it feels like it's worse because it's happening in April instead of in March. And it's happening to players that are actively on our rosters and hurting us after we can't do anything about it in a draft. I don't know how you're feeling about these or how much it's been impacting your rosters. How are you doing?
Fortunately, I'm doing all right. And much of that has to do with luck. It's like the Phil Hellmuth poker meme, dodging bullets, right? That's all we're doing right now. And I feel like right now, if you're dodging bullets, you're doing okay, probably.
Yeah. In my actual job, I'm in the middle of interviews right now. And I interviewed somebody, hopefully you're listening. And he sent me an email after the fact, thanking me for the interview and all that. And he at the very end of the email, he's like, and luckily I had Hunter Brown on my bench. And I should preface that by saying the beginning of our interview was like the first 15 minutes of our interview was just talking about fantasy baseball and NFBC and other leagues we play in and whatnot. So it was a positive interview. Let's just put it that way. Yeah, so luckily that falls into the luck category, as you mentioned. And so luck is definitely part of it. Luckily for us, we have some extra help for us today to go over our fab bids. And it is the fab master himself, Todd Whitestone. He's been writing a weekly article at SB Streamer to start, but you've been at FTN for a couple of years now, at least.
Right.
It's one of the very few articles at FTN that you can get for free without the behind the paywall. And I commend you for sticking with that as well, Todd. Yes. So really, honestly, I say that because everybody listening has absolutely no excuse to not be reading Todd's article there over at FTN. But you should be following Todd on the Twitter at Telestar8. And you can listen to him pretty much every other episode of On the Wire, because I believe Todd is in the lead. Sorry, Lucas, for the most guest spots here on the Wire. So we're glad to have you back. Todd, how you doing?
Fine. I'm glad to be here with you guys. I miss when I don't talk to you for some period of time, but one correction, I am at Telestar 7. So if people are looking for me, that's where I am. But I'm happy to do the free article because I feel like my article, which is about the main event and standings, and it's better suited as a free article. It's not really intended to be, you know, some, you know, super secret thing. So it's just an organized way of looking at the main event generally. So I'm happy to contribute with that. And I think Vlad Sedler appreciates it. He's actually the true Fab Master, Adam. You know,
he's got a different nickname. He has the Fab Whisperer nickname.
Oh, that's right.
I wanted to give you something different.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, what you do, I think the fact that you've been doing it for so long, for so many years, years on years, is commendable. You know, when I first started writing, I started doing a similar article over at Pitcherless, but using TGFBI as my main source of truth as far as fab trends and stuff like that. And I would scatter in some insight from the main event as well, because I wanted to stick with the 15 teamers. But I found myself not being able to keep up with myself. So the fact that you've been able to do it, you know, week after week, year after year is amazing, because then we get the pleasure of talking to you about trends that you've seen through the years, and we will definitely be doing that later on in the show. That's called a tease, people. That's how you do it. Let's get into some news in the meantime, though, guys. Like I said, we don't have all of the injury news to talk about, which is nice. Not all of it's good, but it's still not all injuries. Todd, I'm going to start here with you, though. We talked about it last week or the week prior. Julio Teheran, he had joined the Mets rotation on a deal with New York. And as quickly as he joined, he just as quickly leaves. As he was demoted and refused his assignment, poof, he is now a free agent once again. We'll see if he can latch on anywhere else. But I'm more interested in what kind of a hole his absence leaves in the Mets rotation, and what kind of an opportunity are you seeing for anybody else in New York?
Yeah, so, Teheran, I don't think was a great fantasy commodity even before, but but now, of course, he's gone. So Jose Buto seems to be the man. He made a spot start Thursday against the Tigers, did pretty well, six innings pitch, one earned run. And he was pitching in Syracuse, and he did pretty well in the majors last year, 3.64 ERA. But I think that was the majors last year, 3.64 last year. But at Syracuse, he's been really not that great, 5.93 ERA last year. I'm not really that optimistic. Yes, the Citi Field is a good park to pitch in. I'm not really sure what the Mets are doing, you know, generally. I am a Yankee fan, so maybe that's the reason why. But I'm not too optimistic that he's a great pickup. I think maybe a spot start here or there, but I wouldn't spend a lot of fab on Jose Buto.
Yeah, Kevin, anybody of interest here that you think could either take over for these options or somebody else that you've been noticing, or you're pretty much on the same page here?
Unfortunately, I don't see much else for the Mets right now. I agree. And he's probably lined up to pitch at the Dodgers this coming week. So I agree with everything Todd said, including the not much interest.
Yeah, there we go. all right. Well, let me present you, Kevin, with somebody who you've always had more interest in. And that is your boy, Wade Miley. He is back joining the Brewers rotation after being reinstated from the 15-day IL himself. Overall, like, how excited are you? And if you're not spending triple digits to get him in all of your leagues, I'm going to be very disappointed. But in all seriousness, like, what kind of impact are you seeing Miley have on this Brewers rotation? Because he is entering the rotation.
Yeah, and it's just as usual with Wade Miley for me. I think he's still gets a really bad rap for the last couple of starts of 2019, I believe it was, when he had a 2 ERA all season long, and then people didn't take him out of their lineup at the end of the season when he had a couple of blowups, and sure enough, then he had a third blowup. He lost people's fantasy seasons. Now, the thing is, they wouldn't have been in that position without him, probably. But when healthy, Wade Miley has been a very serviceable, especially 15-team league starting pitcher, and he's doing it with Milwaukee just like he's done it everywhere else he's been. And now that he is presumably healthy again, I'm plugging him right back in my lineups. I know I'm one of the few that has as much confidence as I do. I think most fantasy players are willing to stream him here and there, but I'm willing to use him in most spots, and I don't have to spend triple digits at him. I already have him rostered everywhere.
There's the line that I was waiting for. That's the big brain. That's the big brain meme right there. You don't have to spend triple digits on Wade Miley if you just draft him ahead of time. Yeah, I'm just interested to see what kind of, because the thing is that Wade Miley is going to be in the rotation, which means somebody else is not. Simple as that.
Right now, it's probably Aaron Ashby with the way he's performed recently. And I think we may have already seen that, unfortunately. I know
Ashby already got sent
doesn't
back
have
down,
as much. Yeah, he doesn't have as much interest as we saw last season, and that's due to last season, I think. But he's still somebody we have hope for. But right now he's probably the odd man out.
Yeah. And for
and keep an eye on Gasser. You know, Milwaukee needs some starting pitching depth. So I think Gasser is probably maybe coming sooner than we may have thought.
Sure. All right, let's see. Todd, let's move over to Tampa Bay here and get off the pitchers and get into some hitters. Though this is one of the few injury notes that we got to talk about. Brandon Lau is dealing, you know, again, shocker, more at 11. Shock dealing with an injury. This time it's an oblique issue. Kevin Cash says he is likely to miss some time. And since that quote, he has been put, Brandon Lau has, on the IL, at least a 10-day IL. But I have not personally seen a timetable. I would expect that to last longer than the minimum. Ultimately, my question here with Lau is the juice worth the squeeze with this kind, especially in a league where you have no IL spots, like an NFBC format? Obviously, you got unlimited IL spots in a Yahoo or CBS league or whatever, just stash them and see what happens. But like, are we just going to be playing this game all season long, where you're stashing, you get them for a couple of weeks and you stash them and et cetera. And then on top of that, he's going to be missing for at least, you know, 10, if not, you know, probably longer. What kind of an impact is his absence having or going to have on the Tampa Bay lineup?
Yeah. First, as far as holding Lau, I mean, I think the only place you'd think about it would be a 15 team league. And even then I would carefully scan the middle infield wire to see if really the options there are just flat better than Lau. Cause he just, I think even if he comes back, Adam, I think he might fall into a platoon, you know, so I'm not sure he's really extremely valuable at this point in his career. But maybe you could think about holding him until you hear more news. The guy that benefits, I think, is Curtis Meade. I think in NFBC, he's only eligible at third base, not second. So that you have to check and see if that works for you if you had Lau. He's a pretty good prospect. He's sort of been, you know, the way Tampa does it, they bring him up, they push him down to the minors, they play him for a few days, this sort of thing. The thing about Meade is he's a pretty good hitter. He's got a good eye, but he doesn't really steal bases. So if you're looking for speed, he's not really the guy. He might be helpful in counting stats and batting average. So you have to see if he really fits your squad, but I think he will get more time. I think he's the obvious choice and he's a pretty good overall player. So I don't think he's going to lose time or go 2-for-41 or something.
Yeah. Kevin, are you holding on? Is Lau just the type of player that like, if you have nobody else on the IL magically somehow you hold on to him, but like he's your first cut if you have multiple people on the IL in those types of leagues, or do you feel like you need to hold on to him a little bit longer than that?
No, I think that sounds about right. I agree with Todd. He said when he is healthy, he's so streaky as well. Mm-hmm. So it's something we can deal with. We can deal with him being streaky. We may be able to deal with a guy being banged up and missing time now and then. Dealing with both from the same player makes it more difficult. I also think I agree with Curtis Meade. I also believe this kind of shores up maybe a little extra playing time and extra plate appearances for Ahmed Rosario. Definitely will play against lefties, but has been playing versus more righties recently since Lau's injury.
Turn Rosario does have that second base eligibility along with shortstop. So that's nice to have that already in place. 36% rostered in online championships from what I'm seeing. Oh, sorry. That's actually OC qualifiers, but still, those are your 12 teamers still readily available in those situations. So a name to at least put on your waterfall bids if he's out there. All right. Well, if you're looking for middle infielders to replace Lau or pretty much anybody else, you probably could do worse than Jackson Holliday, who makes his MLB debut for the Orioles. Todd, if he is available in your 12-teamer for whatever reason, somebody was upset because he didn't make the opening roster and they ended up dropping him in week one, week two. you know, what kind of a bid is not so much are you willing to put on, but how much is he worth putting on at this point? And this is going to ultimately kind of trickle down into our conversation later. But like, what are you expecting him to go for in those rare circumstances where he's actually available?
Well, he probably will go for more than he's worth. I mean, he's a big name. He's a number one prospect. The thing about Holiday is that he's not really a big power hitter, at least at this point in his career. He's 20 years old, and I think when he's 23, 24, that will probably be different. But now I think he's a stolen base threat, and he's a good maybe help for average when he gets rolling. But I think people are just going to be excited about the name and the prospect pedigree and this sort of thing. But, I mean, I'm not convinced this is a savior for your team. He's not going to be available in many leagues, so it's probably not a big deal. But if it was a 12, you know, I'm all for grabbing upside in 12. So I certainly would bid on him, maybe $50 or $75 or something. But I just feel like he's going to go for more than he's worth. He's not guaranteed to be full-time all the time. And they might even send him down. He's struggling at the very, very beginning. And he was batting against Freddie Peralta tonight, which is, you know, welcome to the major leagues, kid. Go get him. You know, like, it's not that easy to hit Freddie Peralta. You know, so I think he's going to have some struggles a little bit. And, you know, I just feel like you should temper your bids. I would just say don't treat him as, you know, he's going to really save the season for me. I don't think he – maybe in 3 years – he'll be that kind of player, but not now.
Yeah, I'm just be interested. He is available, from what my math is, he's available in one online championship league. he's rostered 99%. So I'm pretty sure that just means one. So I'll be just curious to see where he goes in that particular league. Of course, these are 12 teamers. I'm just interested in the timing that the Orioles chose to call him up. Because he didn't make the opening day roster, so he's not eligible for the bonus picks if he wins Rookie of the Year. At the same time, they called him up too early to manipulate his service time if he stays up all year. So that, yeah. You know, the cynic in me makes it believable that he will get sent down at some point this season unless he just starts hitting the crap out of the ball. And forcing their hand to like not be able to do it. He was doing so in AAA along with the rest of his team, as Kevin, you and I talked about last week. Houston Kjerstad and all Kobe Mayo and all of them. So I won't be surprised if he turns it around quickly enough. But if he doesn't, Todd, I'm with you. I have no doubt that Baltimore will send them back down for at least another 2 weeks.
Right.
To, you know, you can manipulate the service time throughout the season. It doesn't have to happen just in the first 3 weeks of the season. Right.
It does appear there is a little quirk in that, Adam. The number of days they need to be on the active roster to qualify for the draft pick compensation if they win Rookie of the Year is 172 days. Guess how many days Jackson Holiday will be on the roster if he stays with the team the rest of the season? 172 days. Well, so
might have been some correlation in that.
this was Baltimore hedging, right? Because if they don't bring him up until June, is he good enough to still finish top three in Rookie of the Year voting? Probably. I mean, there's a chance, right? A non-zero chance. And if he does that, he gets credit yes. for a year of service time, but Baltimore would get nothing. So Baltimore's hedging here, I think. If he gets off to a good start, better than what we've seen, it's only been three games. If it's better than what we've seen over the past 3 days, they think he's got a chance, they'll roll with him so that they do get at least a draft pick when they lose that year of service time. Otherwise, yes, he is going to be sent back down to manipulate that time if they do not believe he is performing well enough to win Rookie of the Year. That's what we're looking at here.
Yeah, I mean, after seeing, you know, how Wyatt Langford, who obviously was the favorite to win AL Rookie of the Year, has started his season, anything is up for grabs still in the AL. So I get their intention there. I think I was just under that impression that you had to start the season on the opening day roster.
It's really close. You have about an 8-day window. Is all.
Yeah, so we'll see how that works out. Obviously, the Orioles have had much success in the AL Rookie of the Year category in the last 2 years, with obviously Adley finishing second and then Gunnar Henderson winning his bid last year. So we'll see if they can three-peat in the top two of voting.
I really hope the Orioles get another draft pick. I mean, they don't have enough good young players. I'm really worried about the Orioles myself. But
that Norfolk team needs some reinforcements.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Let's get another hitter.
Oh man, I really like to see the Norfolk tide.
And by the way, they're tearing it up again tonight. But they're all hitting home runs again.
Oh my god! You know what they might do, Kevin? Is they might. They might have Holiday up for a couple of weeks. If he's struggling a little bit, they might send him down, bring up Kerstad for a couple of weeks. You know, give these guys each a little taste of just the majors.
Yeah.
You know, and just say, okay, Mayo, you guys had a shot.
Norby.
Yeah, Norby, Mayo. And then, you know, they'll basically still retain all the rights because I don't think they're quite ready to dump the Ryan O'Hearns quite yet. So, you know,
right, and Mateos.
I think that's a possibility rather than just Holiday's up all year and Mayo and Kerstad are just stuck at AAA.
That would be quite the scene. Just like what's your like every homestand, they just rotate it in.
Yeah, so really.
Like every 10 or 14 days. All right, who's the that's the theme. That's the theme of this homestand is who are we gonna see is the mystery player.
This is the rookie locker. You just go over there.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that throughout the season and see if that comes to fruition. That's going to do it for our news section of the pod. A little lighter than normal, and that's going to happen throughout the season as stuff happens in bulk, and then we get to be a little quiet about it. But it gives us more time to talk to Todd about what we're here to talk about, and that is, of course, Fab. We do this each and every week, and Todd is no stranger to it. As he breaks down the trends that he sees and the results he sees in the NFBC main event Fab Run every day. Your article comes out on Mondays, the day after the Fab Runs on Sunday nights. And so it's nice to be able to get that retrospective. Obviously, we're talking about what you should be doing for Fab in the future. Todd gets to talk to us about what actually happened so that you can learn from it and you can actually, you know, you take something away from it, hopefully make adjustments, whether it's for the following week or the following season for that matter. So Todd, tell me a little bit, let's give everybody a little bit better history than me just talking about it. Why did you start doing this? What interested you and why do you keep doing it?
Very good questions. Sometimes I ask myself why do I keep doing it, but the short answer is, Adam, that I think the main event is a really good sort of microcosm of fantasy baseball. First of all, it's the managers are very engaged because they paid a big price to get into the contest. So they don't, you know, stop playing in May when their team is sort of in eighth place or something. They're all bidding most of the year. And they're all very knowledgeable. So it makes it a good league or contest to look at. And it's sort of manageable, although it's getting bigger every year. This year, there's 57 leagues of 15 teams each. And, you know, it's something that I can handle looking at without looking at like the online championship, which is thousands of teams, you know, that you and there's people that are bidding $900 the first week and just not really anything that you sort of learn from. So I like doing it from that perspective and also putting in the standings and putting in the names of the fantasy managers was something I didn't see a lot of articles or any articles doing. You know, it's sort of not the, oh, here's three players to pick up article, which you see a lot of, which I'm not denigrating them, but there's a lot of those. There's not that many, I don't think, that follow a contest and then try to sort of get people familiar with this guy is leading and he's a great fantasy player. And, you know, he's not just leading one league, he's leading three. And, you know, I think it's just interesting from that point of view, as opposed to just saying, oh, you know, Wyatt Langford is a good young prospect, which, I mean, I think everybody knows at this point. So anyway, so that's why I started it. I don't know how long I'll keep doing it, but I think it's valuable. And also, as we'll get into, I do pick up some things about Fab that I think looking at this contest sort of tells you how it works and what the best approach is in theory anyway. That's what I also enjoy doing.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's interesting just to know what those trends are, and we'll get into those mm-hmm. in a second. But I think your point to really calling out the managers that are making these decisions and placing these bids, right. And not so much to like follow the trends that they're setting and like doing right. research on your possible opponents. I mean, which I'm sure can, you know, be useful in those very competitive environments, but for your average reader who's not playing in the main event, they don't really care about that, but it gives credence to the decisions that they're making and the results that they're seeing based on those decisions. So, right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really smart people in the industry that don't play in the main event, and there's a lot of really sure. smart people who play in the main event that don't create content, but they're still very successful. On the other end, just like any other league, there are some terrible players in the main event. Just because you shell out $1,700, does not make you a good player. I think we all realize that.
Yeah, right.
There's always like tweets about rogue drafters and people making weird decisions and yada yada yada. But I can get behind the overall concept that it's a, you know, the money makes it a more not only competitive but typically active environment, not only for bidding and Fab, but just setting lineups and being committed to your teams. Even the players that play in like multiple of these leagues, that's still, you know, where they're spending a lot of their attention. So I appreciate why you choose the main event with the overall component, with the multiple leagues, and obviously the high price point is going to keep people engaged. What have you seen change over the years, though? Like I said, when did you start doing this? If you can remember that far back, and like, what have you seen as a general trend as far as, you know, when money is being spent in the season, what positions have been more of a focus in the past that maybe haven't been a focus more recently? Any other trends that I'm not going to list out every example. I'll let you do the talk.
Sure. So I think I've been doing it since 2021. So this is the fourth year. And in terms of positions, you know, usually the relief pitcher is the prime area of big bids, because people either lose a closer or they didn't get enough closers and they got to spend a lot when usually one becomes available. But last year that really didn't happen. So that was a little different in 23 than the other years. But that was made up, as you guys remember, by all the young players that came up in 2023. Every week there was a new hot rookie, and whoever missed out on them last week was going to bid high on the next week. And I think that was unusual. I don't think that's going to repeat this year. And in fact, the bid started out lower in this past Fab than previous years. But to answer your other question, the key period for Fab in the main event, and probably for most Fab leagues, is weeks 2 through 8. So about weeks 2 through 8 is when people spend a lot of their Fab and they're trying to correct things, trying to get a hot free agent. And what I put down was usually the average is $60 per week per main event team for that between week 2 and week 8. Now, that did not happen in the last fat period. But when it's over 60, you know people are spending a lot of money and trying to get, usually you need one or two big names to do that. But what I've found, and I have some recommendations for people that are listening about what you can do to sort of adjust to that. But usually the main event people are spending early and heavy, and then they're trying to pull back after week eight and try to, you know, husband their resources for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I like the fact that you notice like the changes. Like, we didn't see the relief pitching in 2023. Right. A lot of that had to do with the narrative that, you know, everybody created on Twitter and articles and on podcasts about how important it was to draft relief pitching higher in your drafts. Kevin, like, when have you found yourself like overcorrecting, if you will, in the next year's draft season to hopefully save yourself fab dollars to keep you under the $60 mark each week early on in the season? And if so, like, what kind of examples can you think of in the last like 4 years where you've had to do that?
No, I don't know. I think that's something I really try to avoid, is the overcorrecting. Speaking of the relievers, like, coming into this season, it was my belief. Yeah, last year, that was the first time we saw that we didn't have a high closer turnover. That was the first time we'd seen that in many years. I don't think it's all of a sudden the new thing. And so far this season, that's come to fruition. We've seen several. Unfortunately, it's typically been due to injury. But we do have some other highly drafted closers that don't look very good right now. David Bednar, right? So right. There, I think, is going to be these opportunities throughout the season. So I try really hard not to think that because something happened one time that that's the beginning of a trend.
Sure. Recency bias, though, can be a very strong drug, and it's hard to get off that for sure. Yeah. Yep. I mean, the injury bug, obviously, this isn't a reliever episode, but, you know, obviously that is one of the bigger trends in Fab in general, minus 2023, of course. You know, we have guys that are coming back from injury right now in Toronto. Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson are set to come back soon. We've got Matt Brash is about to hit a rehab stint of his own. So then once he's back, you know, he puts his name back into the ring if Munoz, you know, struggles or what have, or gets injured himself, knock on wood. So there's like you said, there's already been some turnover. There's already been some question marks for some set closers that still technically have their jobs. And then we also have the, you know, the wild card factor of pitchers coming back from injury, maybe sooner than Juan Duran says that he feels really good and he's, you know, he's coming back soon for Minnesota. You talked about it last week, Kevin. You know, Dan Williams was your wild card selection in case he does heal up faster than maybe we were initially expecting. So a lot of factors go into that aspect of what you have to think about, and that creates more opportunity for bidding. Maybe it doesn't jack up the prices on this type of a player, but it allows more opportunities to spend money in general, week in, week out, as you're trying to find out who the correct stash is or who the right dart is that you need to throw. But with all that in mind, Todd, like, yeah, I definitely want to pick your brain about, or I want you to expand on your little tease earlier on the recommendations that you can make for bidders this year. We're, you know, this is only our fourth Fab run that we're about to do on Sunday. So we're right smack in the middle of that week 2 to week 8 period. Yep. Still lots of weeks to go in the season after that. What recommendations can you give to the listeners as far as what you've been seeing and then adjustments that they can be making?
Okay, sure. So I have three recommendations that people can follow. First is, I call the top bid every week in the main event the wow bid. And that's usually, you know, the highest priced new rookie or closer. And my first suggestion is to avoid doing that. don't do the $200 to $300 bid. Now, people win sometimes leagues by doing that and then pulling back. I'm saying that's a narrower path to success, in my opinion. I looked at this more carefully a couple of years back, and the people that did the big bid early generally finished lower in the standings than the people that did smaller bids early in the season. So that would be my first suggestion. And as support for this, I looked at the top 14 WoW bids from last year, and about four of them really panned out for the most part for the year. They were Bybee, Bryce Miller, Yuri Perez, and Bobby Miller. So I guess the Millers, if you get to see a Miller, bid on them. But other than that,
starting pitcher.
Yeah,
that's right. But that was out of about 14 WoW bids. So, that you know, I mean, that's not a good percentage when you're thinking about a $200, $300 fab bid. I would suggest not doing that, first of all. Second thing, which is sounds dumb, but create a budget that you're trying to live with. It doesn't mean you can't go over it a little bit, you know, or if you have a certain need at third base or left field or whatever. But I would say to create a budget where, and I provided one in the article I sent both of you, which I think you're going to tag Adam in this show notes so people can take a look at it. There's an example budget. You can adjust it and change it. But the idea is that you spend early. You don't want to not spend, but you spend less than these other people that are going, you know, $60, $70 a week. So you pull back a little, and then you sort of have a little bit of the hammer for the 4 months of the season that follows. So that's suggestion number two. You can look at that budget and decide what you want to do. And then the third and last one is be careful of multiple bids. This is the one that really hurts me because you think you're doing a good job, and then you say, okay, I'm going to just bid $30 on this guy. It's not a lot. And then, but there's a couple other guys I'm going to bid, you know, $25, $30 on them. And then what do you know? You win all three, which is great. But then all of a sudden you're way over your budget, even though you didn't bid a lot on one guy. So you have to say to yourself, okay, I'm willing to take a $5, $3 guy in many cases, not in all cases, but many cases. Otherwise, you're going to spend $3 times $30, $90, and you're going to be in the same situation as you were before. So those are the three things. If you follow, you will sort of have more money than most of the other players. And sort of in June, July, August, you can bid a little bit more and you can be controlling instead of trying to just bid $2 on everybody.
Yeah. And I'll definitely be linking Todd's article in the show description. So make sure you check that out from December. It was also included in the FTN draft guide as well. But yeah, it's interesting to talk about winning, like winning multiple bids in a week can be a bad thing. Especially if you are, it also depends on what kind of players that you are bidding on. If you are streaming and you win multiple bids, that, you know, I totally see that being a bad thing because you're not expecting to hold on to said players for more than a week or two, right? Yeah. You're expecting yourself to stream through those and get on to the next one. If you find a player that you think is going to last you the remainder of the season or even multiple months, you can justify that a little bit.
Sure.
You can spend a little bit more because you're ultimately stretching out that budget that you would have been spending to stream, et cetera, throughout the course of the next couple of weeks or months or what have you. But yeah, I agree. It's definitely easy to almost like forget that you spent like your high bid. Your waterfall bids might be $2, but that lead guy might be in the $20-$30 range on multiple different bids. And lo and behold, you were
you might win them. Yeah, so I suggest, Adam, before you do the final fab check, you total up the top bids that you've got. So, like, let's say you have a 30, a 20, a 10, and a five, you total it up and say, okay, if I get all four of these guys, is that fine? Am I okay with that? Then you say, that's fine if that's the number you were thinking of spending. But if it's too much, you got to think about, well, do I want to maybe pull back on the $20 guy, maybe go 10 or 5 on him? So it's just a good final check instead of just saying, oh, I want all four of these guys, so let me bid that number.
I mean, I think there's something to this as well, Kevin, and back me up on this, hopefully. There's also, when you're budgeting your bids, you're not so much also bidding on the player that you're picking up, but you also have to bid on the difference between the player you're picking up and the player you're dropping. So like if you feel as though the player that you are picking up is that much more valuable or brings that much more to the table, then raising your bid a little bit, you know, makes sense. But if there's such a thing as a keep your honest bid, and you just want to make sure that guys get picked up for the right amount. But, you know, if I'm dropping player A, they're healthy, they're in a strong side of platoon, and the guy I'm picking up has everyday playing role, but they're still both producing, like, is that guy even on the surface worth $25-$30 in my situation? Probably not. Do you find yourself really having to pull back the curtain on that when you're making these bids? You're like, I know this guy is going to go for, you know, $40-$45. He's worth that, just not to me. And right. Kind of holding yourself back. Kevin, have you kind of found yourself in those situations?
Oh, 100%. There's so many different things to look at. For one, there's different reasons we're interested in different players. We may have an injury, so we don't have a shortstop. We have to get a shortstop, right? In those situations, I'm having an entire claim with all the waterfall bids, nothing but shortstops, going to make sure I get one. That the getting multiple players at the top of different claim lists that Todd brought up is a great point. And one way to be careful about that is, you don't have to have the same price on a player in each claim list.
Right.
Right. So your first claim list, you could have all four guys for $30, but you're only getting one of them out of that claim list. Your next claim list where, well, if I get lucky, do I want more than one of them? Yeah, but I'm not paying $30 for the second one. Right. I'll pay $15 if I get them both. Right. So there's that to take into account. Then you have the players where this player is now available, whether it's a young player that got called up or somebody coming back from injury or somebody just all of a sudden their entire playing time situation changed. And we are interested in that player because he's an upgrade over what we have. And then that's what you're talking about, Adam. It's not what that player's worth. It's what, how much more, what's he worth? How much better is he than the player he's replacing for me, right?
Yeah.
All of this we have to take into account. That's why we spend hours of our weekends doing this. But absolutely, we got to take it all into account.
Right. There are times to bid big. There are times to bid big. You know, your team really needs a particular player. He looks like he's really a solution for the year. And then you think, okay, I can get by with 600 fab the rest of the year. This is a unique situation, but I wouldn't do it lightly. I wouldn't, you know, just say this is my modus operandi for this week four, you know, that some people do, you know. Just be very careful.
The way I do that, Todd, is when I start the season, my fab budget for the year in my mind is $800. Mm-hmm. That's my typical weekly money. And then I budget that. Of course, the first week or two, I shouldn't need as much. The last few weeks, I shouldn't need as much. But those last few weeks are what I'm saving it for. It is so nice when you can go $3 to $5 on players in September and everybody else is trying to get them for one because that's all they have. Right. So I am saving that. And then in the middle, but I have that $200 set aside, and maybe one time throughout the season, maybe a couple of guys, I cut it in half, but that's what I use for my my one, maybe two shots that I'm going to take during the year.
Yeah, that's good. That's a good approach.
Yeah, as long as you spread out that money, whether it's $800 or $1,000 or even $500, as long as you're evening that out week to week, you can make that work regardless of what that is.
It cannot be understated how nice it is to be able to go $3 or $4 on three or four different players in September, though.
Yeah.
So many of it happens to my teams, too, no matter how much we plan on this.
Right.
It's so hard to keep it, but if you do, you will be happy you did.
Yeah. Just the key is to have a plan. You can adjust away from the plan, but if you have no plan, then, you know, you're going to end up with, I guarantee you're going to end up with a low amount of money in the middle of the season.
Or too much.
Definitely been in that case where, oh, wow, I have $300 left and it's September 2nd. Like, what am I going to do here? I find myself in, like, especially in my 12 teamers, that'll happen more often than my 15 teamers. I'm like, all right, I'm spending $50 on this guy and he's going to be on my team for 2 weeks. But you know what? I'll get him, I guess. all right. Well, we talked a lot about that article, but Todd, tell me, give everybody the opportunity to hear things that you are doing, where you're doing them, and where they can find any other work that you have going on.
Sure. So my weekly article, as you mentioned, is at ftnfantasy.com. It's, you know, people know Vlad Sedler's article on which he writes weekly about the FAB recommendations. That's a great resource. And then we have all kinds of other articles going up. We have, you know, relievers, we have lineup management, we have players to drop, which I think is a unique approach by Mike Mager. He's writing an article like that. And then the interesting thing that we're just doing, similar to what PitcherList is doing, there's an FTN data model, and Jenny Butler, who's a great analyst and player, she's organizing the data approach where it's going to be projections every week, similar to what you guys have. So there's a lot going on. There's articles every day. I can't even keep up with all of them myself, but it's a great resource. And you certainly can contact me if you're interested in subscribing. I've been writing there for 2 years, and Vlad is really growing the stable of people that are writing there. And it's really it's mostly designed for NFBC players, but I think there are people also that are not NFBC players that do subscribe as well.
Yeah, of course. There's one thing to be said that you are only catering to one group, but at the same time, there's a lot you can actually, as a, you know, content somebody who brings, like, who consumes content, you can listen and read things that are directed at a certain format and then translate that into your own format. So don't be wary of being like, I'm not going to go check out this site or this page or this article because it's only catering to, you know, 10 teamers. You can still use that information for your 15 teamers if you can be creative in your own brain space. I was looking through this list of obviously the content creators over at FTN that you said Vlad had been putting together. Of course, Lucas Bury sticks out to me here as being your competitor, as our most seen or most heard guest on the show. So, Lucas, reach out. We'll get you back on. Get you back on top. Let's see. I'm going to give you another a double shout out to Jenny Butler. Congratulations to FTN for making the right call and bringing Jenny in. Congratulations to Jenny for the opportunity. But ultimately, I think FTN is the winner here. Jenny is amazing, both as a player and just as a person. And just
she's also a data analyst. So
yeah, I mean, that's what she does. Yeah,
she's a perfect fit for that position where she's going to be managing it. So yeah, I think it's a great win for us, and I think the projections will be really good.
Cool. Yeah, so make sure you're checking that out along with Todd's article every week. Todd's article is a nice little segue into the FTN platform because obviously, as I mentioned earlier, you can read that without the paywall in the way. But then, get past the paywall and get everything else as well. All right, let's get into the main focus here of every episode, guys. We got to make some recommendations for our listeners to consider as they are making their bids on Sunday night. And we, as we always do, we'll go category by category or groupings of categories, starting in the hitter categories with our power cats. We have home runs, RBIs that we're focusing on. Kevin, start us off here with somebody or somebody's that may knock in a couple bombs and, you know, drive a couple runs.
Yeah, I got a couple here. One, I'm going to start off with a catcher. We don't talk about many catchers in this area of the podcast very often, but Yvan Herrera, a lot of people were on him in St. Louis coming into the year, big hopes for Herrera. Up to three home runs. Most impressive to me is his 39.4% hard contact rate. That is amazing. That is based on per plate appearance, not batted ball event. That's where we get hard contact rather than hard hit. Most everybody knows that, but we haven't brought it up yet this season, I don't think. So quick refresher there. He is 84% rostered in main events, only rostered in about a third of 12-team online championships. So much more availability there. 12-team, two catcher leagues. I think he's going to get enough playing time to make that viable, even with Wilson Contreras back at catcher on Friday after DHing for 4 or 5 days due to a swollen hand. I think they'll continue to play him at DH and get Herrera in there behind the plate often enough that in a two catcher league, Herrera is viable here. Another player that's been getting more and more playing time, especially against right-handed pitching, is Dominic Canzone. Only 32% rostered even in main events, 3% in 12-team online championships, and they do face 5 out of 6 right-handed pitchers, right-handed starters this coming week, it does appear. And then I threw one in at the last possible minute, right before we started recording, because I was shocked at his low rostership in the 12-team leagues. Colton Cowser, he's playing his way into more and more playing time. He's playing his way into playing time against left-handed starting pitching, it appears. Mm-hmm. That doesn't matter for this coming week. The Baltimore Orioles are facing 5 out of 6 right-handed starting pitchers, it appears, at this point. Colton Cowser is actually available in 7% of main events. That was a little surprising, but much more surprising that he is only rostered in 27% of 12-team online championships at this point. I believe after Sunday night, the main event will definitely be 100%. And those online championship, that 27% will probably be really close to 100, if not make it there for those leagues as well.
Yeah, I was interested to see what I saw your percentages on the main event, obviously pretty high, but I was curious to see how many we see Cowser in the lineup. So pulling up that, you know, start percentages on the NFBC website, I wish I had looked at it yesterday, obviously before lineups changed, and I have a feeling that it was a lot lower. And obviously after what he's been doing lately, it's up to 91%. So there's still a handful of leagues or managers out there that have Cowser on their bench. And I'm wondering if they just forgot to set their lineups for the second half of the week, or they consciously just assume it'll fall off for karma reasons. But yeah, to your point, I think both of those numbers are going to 100% in the main event as of Monday.
And our friend Anthony Gialde in the chat is he a slight post-hype sleeper? Yeah, slight, because we're not very post of the hype yet. I think we're still. It might have been tailing off a little bit. And there were some that were on him for 2023, and that did not come to fruition. Right. So yeah, there is some post-hype to this. But anytime anybody uses that phrase, I'm going to bring it up. Post-hype sleeper, my favorite players.
Yeah. I also like, of course, the call out for a hard contact rate. If nothing else, it's a great measurement in general because it is based on contact, but it also stabilizes faster than hard hit rate because obviously there are more events to help it stabilize. So you get that number stabilizing earlier on in the season. I'm not sure we're quite far enough in for it to completely stabilize yet, but it will stabilize quicker than hard hit rate for sure. Todd, give me some more power hitters to consider to add to my waterfall bids here.
Sure. First of all, I want to support Kevin in Ivan Herrera. It's just a flat good hitter if you've seen him play. And that kid, I think they're going to have him in the lineup. So I think they might end up flipping Contreras and Herrera in the DH and catcher, you know, because I think that's going to be their best lineup, you know. So anyway, that's my two cents on Herrera. I think he's just too good to sort of bench, you know, 4 days a week or something. Anyway, I have two players. One is sort of a current pickup, and that guy is Gavin Sheets. He's 4% owned and 63% owned in the online and main event, respectively. And he's hitting in the middle of the lineup. He's hitting .333. He's got a couple homers, got a steal. He's not really a steal guy, but he's going to be in the middle of the lineup. Even though the White Sox aren't a great lineup, I still think he's first base and outfield eligible. He's a great guy. And I think this week, I wrote down later, I think he's got 5 of 6 righties or something. So he's very strong against right-handed pitching. So that's my main recommendation, is to look for Sheets. The second guy is more of a watch. It's, I think Kevin loves this guy, Edward Olivares. He knows the road to Omaha so well, and now he's in Pittsburgh, so he can't drive to Omaha. But anyway, he's only 1% owned in the 12s and 14% in the mains. He's not playing every day, but he's got 3 homers, and I think if he keeps it up, he's going to get playing time. I don't think the Pirates are so stacked that they can have to have him on the bench. I would watch Jack Suwinski, who's struggling a bit. Or if there's an injury in Pittsburgh outfield, I think Eddie, I've always thought he has a lot of potential, and he could steal bases too. So I think I'd watch him for now, unless you really needed an outfielder. But I think he's worth keeping an eye on, and he could hit homers if he's in the lineup.
I was disappointed just to see that I was under the impression that Edward Olivares was finally out of options. And I see that he still has one listed, at least on his roster resource.
No.
So, I mean, good for me in a way, as I live in Indianapolis and Pittsburgh's AAA team, as everybody knows by now listening here, knows that that is their AAA affiliate. So who knows? Maybe the Pittsburgh will send him to
as long as they don't send him to
through Ohio to Indianapolis and back.
He can't go to Omaha, though, right?
No, he won't make it to Omaha. Okay. Unless they schedule that demotion just properly so that the Indianapolis team is playing in Omaha that week.
That would be funny. Weekend. That would be funny.
That would be classic.
It'll be sad, though.
All right, well, you mentioned Gavin Sheets, not so much a speed guy. Let's get some speed guys in here. Todd, I'll let you lead us off here. Looking for stolen bases, looking for runs scored. Who you got?
So the first guy is David Hamilton, Boston's shortstop. He's 3 for 11 so far. He's got a homer. He's got a steal. He hits left-handed. And so I think the Boston plan is that he's going to be the strong side of the platoon with Romy Gonzalez. But I think if he hits, he could play every day in place of Trevor Story. He stole 59 bases last year. 57 of them were in AAA, but still, the kid can run. Now, if he just can hit, I think he's going to play, he's going to hit, and he's going to provide a lot of stolen bases. So that's my main recommendation. He's not owned anywhere in NFBC because he was not up but before Sunday last week. So everybody has a shot at Hamilton if they need a shortstop or stolen bases. The second thing is, again, a little bit more of a watch situation. The Milwaukee second baseman right now, Oliver Dunn, who is playing well. He's got a couple of steals and a homer. He's the guy with the playing time now. So if you needed a guy now, he'd be the guy probably to go to. But the guy that I like better than Oliver Dunn is Joey Ortiz, who they got from Baltimore. And he's the thing about Ortiz is he's a better defender, and he also could play third base, where even though he's in the NFBC, he's eligible only at second right now. So I think he's the guy for the future. He's the guy that's going to get more playing time, and I think he's just as good of a hitter as Dunn. So, he's not a huge stolen base threat, but I think he will steal, 10, 15 bases. So if you need a middle infielder and you can afford to bench a guy, I think Joey Ortiz is a good target for you. And I think Dunn will eventually run out of, BABIP and then not really be as rostered highly as he is now.
Yeah, you only have so much of that BABIP to go around. And when you use it up, it doesn't come back. I love David Hamilton call out, as we talked about him last week, Kevin. And since then, Alex Cora did come out and basically say the whole entire middle infield was platoon based. And we are seeing that obviously in the lineup in the last couple of days. Hamilton did start against a lefty, I think either today or yesterday. So I will echo, Todd, your sentiment that if he can hit his way into that role, he could start stealing away at least a couple games here or there against lefties. And then, Hamilton might not hit that well against lefties, but he's the type of player where you find a way to get him on base at some point, and he's a threat, and you get what you need out of him, which is obviously those stolen bases. Kevin, who else is out there stealing some bases, scoring some runs that you got your eye on?
Well, he hasn't stolen any bases yet. He hasn't even attempted any, but Josh Rojas in Seattle is playing versus every right-handed starting pitcher. And that was kind of a slow week for him. They faced three lefties in the past five or six games, but they're set to face five out of six righties this week. One thing that's really intriguing to me about Josh Rojas is he's hitting the ball pretty well so far, in spite of us not seeing a stolen base attempt, which is what we really want to see from him. It looks like he's being a little more aggressive in the zone. His career in zone percentage is 64.4%, and it's a little over 70% so far in 2024. Only 26 plate appearances, I know, but it is something I'm keeping an eye on, because so far, that's a great sign. Jake McCarthy for Arizona looks to be the beneficiary in Arizona with some of the injuries they've had. He, another platoon guy, especially when we're looking at our 15 team leagues, we're going to be looking at a lot of platoons. Arizona is facing three left-handed starters again this week. The advantage to that, if you need stolen bases and you like Jake McCarthy going forward, is that may keep the price down a little bit on Sunday night. He's only 15% rostered in 12-team online championships. I think he can be viable once Arizona starts facing more right-handed pitching like we're used to most teams. Then I got one more here, and it may be a little early in the season for this, but we talk about guys like this all year long, Adam. Dairon Blanco for the Kansas City Royals has five stolen bases. He's 5 for 5. He only has 5 plate appearances, but he has appeared in 10 of their 13 games going into today and has also scored 4 runs. The Royals have a busy schedule for the next 2 months. 4 of the next 9 weeks, they play 7 games. The other 5, they play 6. They have a lot of games to play. Blanco is getting into the game as a pinch runner or a defensive replacement nearly every game. The stolen bases are going to be there. Some runs scored are going to be there. And he's a 240 to 250 hitter. but he's not even getting many plate appearances. So we'll get stolen bases, we'll get some runs, and his batting average will not hurt us. So he's more, he's not a one category guy. He's more of a 2.5 categories there. So it may be a little early to play someone like that. Zero home runs, zero RBI for the most part. But as the season goes along, it's somebody like this we're going to want to keep an eye on. And even right now, if you have a roster that is just stacked with power and you're getting your home runs and RBI, he could be very beneficial. These stolen bases count the same now that they'll count in September.
Absolutely. I love the fact that you broke out, you know, of course you broke out the Royals schedule of all teams. But the fact that they have so many, they like don't have a 5-game work week for, you know,
the week before the All-Star break, their first one. Yeah.
It's crazy. And we start looking, you know, it's funny. We start looking at this aspect later on in the season where we start counting up. Jason Collette will always do this. Like, how many games do teams have left on the schedule? But it's interesting to kind of do that in the middle of this or the beginning or the middle of the season as well for the next like 2 months. Royals are right up there. And if there is a team that you, doesn't want the time off, it's probably the Royals based on what they've been able to do in the first, you know, part of the season. Well, the run differential was like 40 or something crazy over the first, you tweeted it out, Kevin. It's just, they just been on fire. Sooner or later, Kevin, I'm going to start saying, you know, if you can get a piece of the Royals lineup, you need to do it.
Because
they've been tearing it up. They've been great. They've been awesome. We even have like Nick Pollock saying like, all right, this is an offense now that I need to start thinking about when I'm streaming my pitchers. Hasn't been something he said about that, about them in a while. So they're, you know, if you haven't started taking notice on the Royals offense, you know, you better be changing your tune. Cool. So let's segue that into the opportunity section as we look at the soon to be schedule, not so much 9 weeks out, but just this coming week. We do have quite a few teams that have 7 games, and we have once again another week where nobody has 5 games ahead of them. Also, no strange off days this week, just very standard. You either have 6 games, you're either off on Monday, or actually, I think everybody's off on Thursday this coming week. But there are a couple teams that do have a 7-game slate: Boston, Tampa Bay, Cleveland, Detroit, the Angels, Texas, Miami, the Cubs, Arizona, and San Francisco all play 7 games. Colorado is away for 3 to start the week in Philadelphia. And then they come back home for 3 versus Seattle. So, you know, check your Seattle options out there. But what's interesting is that they start a 9-game homestand, Colorado does. So the following week, they are at home all week long until they finally go back on the road the week after. So that week after, they'll have a very strong, you know, rocky road presence, you know, more than likely. So keep that in mind moving forward into the future. But with all that in mind and anything else you want to consider, Todd, start us off here with options for players that find themselves in a good opportunity, whether it's they are finding themselves with more playing time than you expected, they have some good matchups, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, so there were a few outfielders that I found that had mostly against right-handed pitching. The first guy is Gavin Sheets, who I mentioned before. He gets mostly righties this week. And then the other two of the others are Will Brennan and Kyle Isbell, who also are lefties, and they, I think, get mostly right-handed pitchers this week and aren't highly owned in either case. And then the last guy was Jerkson Profar, who I'm not a big fan of Profar, but he's hitting really well. I don't think they have anybody to replace him with, and he's a switch hitter. So I think he's a guy to consider. He's 3% owned in the 12s and 47% in the main. So if you need a guy in your outfield, I think one of those four guys will be playing almost all week. So I would recommend them taking a look at their schedule and what you need in the outfield.
Great, great. And then, yeah, Kevin, who's gotten some added playing time or played appearances in the books for next week that you're watching out for?
It's not as much about more playing time as it is about who that playing time is going to be against and where for the next week and a half. Brandon Marsh, nearly universally rostered in main events. He is available in one or two of those leagues, so it's worth checking. But he's only rostered in 40% of the 12-team online championships. And it's not at Colorado. But I don't care. The pitching staff is horrible. They play Colorado three games this week. They also get three against the Chicago White Sox. I'm already sold. And then they start the following week with four games at Great American Small Park. I almost used Brandon Marsh in the power category because mm-hmm. he is on a tear, hitting his fourth home run on Friday of this young season, but with this schedule, I thought he fit better here in opportunity because I would start guys of much lesser potential than Brandon Marsh with this schedule coming up.
I guess we talked about it last week about, you know, who are you streaming? What pitchers are you streaming against the White Sox? And I guess it works on both sides of the ball here as well. So, all right. Well, they got a lot of hitters to consider there in those categories. Let's move into the pitching categories here. It'd be behoove of me not to mention, especially since we are recording this on Friday instead of Saturday. PL Pro members get access to Nick Pollock's new SP Fab Forecast podcast. He did produce that one for free this week. So if you're listening to this, once you're done, I recommend tuning over to the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball feed and finding that that show. Just you get a sneak peek of what that show is all about. He goes through all the pickups from main event and online championship options from the NFC rostership percentage standpoint, and who he's picking up, who he's not picking up, and also focusing on two start pitchers for the week. Put that out typically on Fridays or Saturday mornings. So typically we will update that on our show if we record on Saturday nights like we typically do. But check that out. It's about 20-25 minutes long. So he goes through that pretty quickly. So you get a couple extra insights on the starting pitching. But let's get your guys' take here on guys that can add some wins or Ks. Typically, these are your volume plays on the pitching side of things. Kevin, who you got? I'll let you start off the pitching categories here. Wins and Ks are your focus. Who are you focusing on?
Yeah, I like Matt Waldron for San Diego. Only 32% rostered in main events and 2% in online championships. He gets Toronto this week, who so far this season is a bottom five team in OPS versus right-handed pitching. That's the kind of thing I like to look at, checking out these matchups. Also like Martin Perez. Martin Perez looks like 2022 Martin Perez. I can't explain it.
Nobody can.
I'm not even going to try. I'm going to ride him while it's working. I did the same thing in 2022. I don't care why it's working, if it's working for us. And he's only 7% rostered in 12-team OCs, but 60% in the main event. I did want to bring up Cody Poteet. I was interested in him when it appeared we might see him in the middle of the week. Now, all of a sudden, we're being told he's pitching part of the half of the doubleheader on Saturday. So we'll get to see him prior to Sunday night, but we have no idea when they'll use him again. And it probably has a lot to do with what we see on Saturday. So something to monitor. And then one more. He's nearly universally rostered in mains, but available in 40% of 12-teamers. We should see Edward Cabrera this week. In a two-step, he gets at home versus San Francisco at the Chicago Cubs. That one's a little on the iffy side, but when I'm getting San Francisco and in Miami as the other half of that two-step, I'll be willing to throw Cabrera out there right out the gate as he makes his 2024 debut.
Yeah, it's he's some great names. It's interesting because we obviously have some other names that nobody's listed here on that makes it more, they're more nebulous at this time because we don't know if we're going to see them start. Richardson was just announced that he'll probably start one of the doubleheaders for Minnesota as well. Uriel Rodriguez over in Toronto, he's on the taxi squad. We're not sure if he'll make his debut before Sunday to make him eligible for FAB. So obviously a lot of names out there to consider, but a lot of gray area as far as what their roles will be moving into the following week and the, you know, obviously the rest of the season. Todd, what other names are out there that you have your eye on for, especially for volume stats like wins and strikeouts?
Okay. I think unfortunately I looked at the schedule wrong. I have the wrong week, but these guys that I listed still are helpful. I don't think they have two steps like I was planning, but Kevin's guy, Wade Miley, is certainly worth a pickup. And Keaton Wynn for San Francisco is not highly owned in the 12s. He's only 25% owned. And let me just see. I don't know who he really does get this week. Let's see. He's got at Miami. So that's a really good start, even though it's not a two-step. And they have Miley, let's see, he's versus San Diego. I think he's supposed to only get one this week. So that would be not as good, but still San Diego is fine for him. The other guy is Darius Vines, who supposedly is going to get a start for Atlanta. Now he's at Houston, which you may want to avoid, but Houston's not really been hitting tremendously. So you could really go with that and hope for a win because Atlanta, you know, with their offense, they could outscore the opposition if he can go five innings. And then maybe he sticks around a bit because the other guys that they have, you know, Elder and Dodd and some of these other guys have really not panned out. So anybody pitching for Atlanta is usually a decent option. If you want him, even get him and put him on your bench and just see how he does. So those would be the three guys I would point out for wins and Ks.
Yeah, I mean, I like the Vines call out because, like you said, if there's an opportunity for him to hold on to it, but that opportunity also existed for Winans as well. And right. We see him already get sent back down. Atlanta is not so much the new Dodgers, but they do have a lot of options that are not like extremely high end prospects.
Yeah, they're not.
They can continue to go kind of back and forth and rotate in and out throughout the season to kind of fill the gaps that obviously the Striders of the world have created for that rotation.
Yeah, I think it's because the guys are not good. If they had a guy that was above average, I think they'd be happy to go with them. But yeah. I think these guys have underwhelmed. So they're not going to stick with one of these guys right now.
Yeah, here's what I love about Vines. Yeah, he's pitching at Houston, but it appears that he'll be facing Hunter Brown, who did not fare so well on Thursday. And then if he does stick, it's at Miami and at Seattle, who Seattle's tougher, but, you know, they're one of the worst strikeout teams in the league. Mm-hmm. So a couple of really nice matchups coming up if he does perform well against Houston and stick.
It's a great park. It's probably the best pitcher's park in Major League Baseball, I think.
Yeah, at this stage of the game, for sure. All right, well, we talked about volume. Let's talk about ratios here. Kevin, keep us going here in some targets for ERA and WHIP as we start, you know, as we continue to chip away at these categories from the get-go.
Yeah, we talk about these guys often throughout the season, Adam. I'm looking at not only how they have been performing, but upcoming schedule and more number of games than actual opponents. I think when we're looking at guys pitching one or two innings at a time, sure, that there are lineups we'd rather face than others, but I don't pay a whole lot of attention to that when I'm looking at relievers, which is who I am looking at this week for the ratios here. Mark Leiter hasn't given up a run yet. The Cubs have seven games this week. Could slip into a save as well, as we have seen Alzolay have some issues. Most of us believe that David Robertson will be the beneficiary of that at some point, I think. But Mark Leiter could slide in there as well, especially when they have such a busy schedule coming up. We don't know who will have pitched on the previous couple of days. And then one guy that I bring up once or twice every season in this category, probably not ever going to be the closer in Cleveland. In fact, I think if we would see a Class A injury, Scott Barlow would probably get the first shot. But Nick Sandlin, year in, year out, puts up nice ratios for us, and he's doing the same thing this year. Hasn't given up a run yet. A lot of games coming up, and hopefully we see him quite often. Both of these guys available everywhere. Sandlin is actually rostered in 5% of main events, but the rest of it's zeros for these guys.
Of course, Hector Neris would be the one that I would assume would get the role in Chicago over Leiter in most scenarios. David Robertson in Texas, just to throw out disclaimer in there.
Robertson was in Chicago like 4 years ago. So
yes, he was. And, you know, he did well in his time there. That's not the case right now. But I like just the fact that you can target a guy in a relief position who's in the seventh, eighth, or ninth inning. And if you can back your way into a save, sure, but that's not what we're talking about right here. We're talking about strictly focusing on your ratios. And it's less of a risk in that way as well. So you can still get these type of guys for $1, $2, $3 if you're really trying to stretch it out and be happy with what you got. Todd, same category. Yeah. We got your ratios. Who are you looking at?
Did you guys, I would like to point out our Ian Hamilton of my Yankees, 2% owned in the 12s, 23% in the mains. He's kind of the high leverage guy. He's when there's a tight game, Aaron Boone is going to go to him. So he could sneak into a win, but he's really pitching well. He's got 7 Ks and 8.1 innings, and he certainly will be helpful if he can go two or three times in a week. And the Yankees have 6 games this week, I believe. But I would say he's a good guy to have, even though – and he might get a save. I mean, if Holmes goes back-to-back days, he might be called on. I think he'd be the next guy right now. And then the second guy is Justin Slayton of the Red Sox, your Red Sox, Adam. 9% owned in the 12s, 28% in the 15s. He's also looked really good. He has a save. 7 Ks and 7.2 innings. And I think he could get a win if there's a tie game. I think the Red Sox would definitely bring him in if he was rested. So I like to get those guys that really are the high leverage options when there's a close game, because you could get a win. You could get a save if it's an extra inning game, even without, you know, the closer being replaced or something like that. So, yeah. Those are the two guys that I would recommend. And I think the Red Sox have 7 games this week. So that would be an opportunity, certainly, if Jansen, they're not going to overwork him, you know, if they get a lead three days in a row.
Yeah, they need to keep Jansen healthy enough to trade him in July. So they're going right. to work on that. As with all of these options, of course, the caveat is, when did they pitch over the weekend?
Right.
If any of these guys stand out as not pitching Saturday or Sunday, they automatically jet to the top of my bid list. So more opportunity, especially a guy like Slayton who's playing on a team that does indeed have 7 games this week with Boston. And yeah, again, all these call outs, guys that are typically pitching in high leverage situations, as Todd, you mentioned, seventh, eighth inning, can very easily, in these situations with seven games, can find themselves in the ninth inning instead, in a tight ball game, in the right situation. All right, well, let's talk about guys that you are actually targeting for saves specifically. Todd, lead us off here on some relievers that can back them, either back themselves into saves, or you think might actually be, you know, vying for the job long term.
Yo, my guy is Jeff Hoffman of the Phillies. He's 22% owned. I thought it would be higher, 22% owned than the 12s and 56% in the main. So even in the main events, he's available fairly frequently. And Philly, you know, is not really going with the Jose Alvarado is the everyday closer type of approach. So I think Hoffman will get some save chances. He already has one, I believe. I think he's reliable and he's a good guy, even if he's not in a safe situation, to kind of come in and give you an inning and get a K or two. And I think he's a good spec in case, you know, Alvarado's not been the most consistent guy in Major League Baseball. He's got great stuff, but sometimes he loses the plate. So I would say if you're scouting around, Hoffman is not a bad guy to land on.
Yeah, Hoffman got the save on Wednesday for the Phillies. He's also, you know, been striking guys out as well. So not something that's going to hurt you in that category as well. Kevin, who you have your eye on for options for saves for this coming week or beyond?
I know this is somebody we've talked about throughout the offseason and even recently, but at only 40% rostered in online championships, I'm continuing to look at Aroldis Chapman. I did bring up Bednar earlier, has had some rough outings, four earned runs in his most recent outing. Prior to Friday, he did have a clean save on Friday, his second save of the year. That may hold off Chapman for a little while, and maybe for good. Anywhere Chapman is available, I've grabbed him because it just hasn't looked good so far for Bednar, and Chapman's looking like Chapman.
Yeah, we'll see if he holds on to that long enough for, you know, Pittsburgh to either, you know, utilize him in those situations, or, you know, whether or not Pittsburgh will still be a team that we're interested in come August, as compared to today. And that'll determine whether or not Chapman is actually given that opportunity at that point for the Pirates. All right. And as we close it out here with, of course, my favorite category, always interested to see the names, Kevin, that you throw out here, and then our guests. I'm going to let Todd finish this off. So, Kevin, start us off here with your any and all wild card selections that you might be considering, again, if you have some kind of flexibility on your rosters at this point.
Yeah, I had trouble with this week. I think part of it was last week we kind of did the blanket, the Norfolk Tides, right? We like them all. And some of that already coming to fruition with the call for Jackson Holliday. I think at this point, and with all the injuries we've had, I'm having an issue with, you know, in any type of stashes, whether it's guys that should be coming back from injury soon, or guys we think are going to get the call soon. Those are typically the types of guys I'm looking at here in the wild card. But, you know, there's a couple of guys, and it is going the coming back from injury route. Talked about Devin Williams last week, that Max Scherzer sounds like maybe a little ahead of schedule, and the Mets could use Max Scherzer right now. So, or the Rangers, excuse me. I already made that mistake with David Robertson, but we'll get a player on the correct team here. So yeah, guys like Max Scherzer, some of these guys that it sounds like they're going to come back a little earlier, or even haven't had a setback, because we've had so many injuries right now. I mean, I started to look at the starting pitcher list, you know, throughout this week leading up to today, and I'm looking at guys, you know, do I even want to consider the guys that aren't fully rostered? And in many cases, we came up with some names. I love the names Todd had for us this week as well, but there aren't many. So I think in many cases, if I have room, I'm going to start trying. I won't have room in many spots, but where I do, I'm going to try to start stashing some of these guys that have a little bit of availability that we're expecting back in the next month and a half, into May. I'm to the point, if I think we're going to see you by the end of May, early June, that I'm interested if I have room on that particular league.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, Todd, same question though. Like, any specific players that, again, may not fit a particular mold, maybe not worth bringing up in any of the categories you brought in, but still an interesting player nonetheless, that you throw in this wild card section?
Yeah, the guy I have is Reese McGuire, Red Sox catcher. I think he's sort of flown under the radar a little bit, but he is getting more of the playing time in Boston than I think Connor Wong was supposed to be the starting catcher. But he's got .267 average. He's hit a couple homers. He looks pretty good at the plate. He's only 15% owned in 12s, 70% in the main event. I think if you have a catcher need, this is a good guy to go get. Boston's a good place to hit, and he seems to be sort of turning the corner a little bit, at least for the moment. So I think we've given you a couple of interesting catcher prospects with Herrera and McGuire. If you have a catcher problem, I think you want to check and see if one of these guys is available.
Yeah, I like that we bookended these suggestions with two catchers. That doesn't happen every week. if you're like me and you're still trying to figure out a way to fill Sean Murphy's hole being created, then I definitely used Wong as that replacement in at least one of, if not two, leagues. So I'm glad to see that there's a couple other options out there that I'll be considering this week to replace Wong. All right. Well, there's a ton of players there to consider. Kevin, lead us out here, though, with any final words of wisdom as we enter our fourth fab period of the 2024 season.
All right. You guys both gave Jenny Butler a shout out earlier in this show, so it's my turn. She likes to often talk about keeping her journals and notes for her leagues, something that I've been interested in. And I brought up in the past about being organized. I set alarms on my phone and such, but I really wanted to be more organized this year, and so far so good. And it's using Jenny's advice, and I have a separate journal for every league. Adam, you talk about every week after fab runs, checking out who was dropped. I take notes and I write down who was dropped. The ones I may be interested in, don't want to forget about it. The prospects that were drafted and then dropped, so they're in the player pool for each individual league. And anything that comes up throughout the week. And it has made my weekends and fab so much easier. Even setting lineups quite a bit easier, because I'm adding my notes for who's playing, what days, and when. And it's not just a journal. It's not just the alarms on my phone for setting lineups, running fab, making sure that I don't forget. It's just overall organization. Whether you have one or two leagues or you have 30, being organized is going to help.
Amen. Amen. That's great advice. And I'm glad that we can get some of that advice early on in the season. It's not just a preseason advice, and it's not too late to hear it in the middle of the season. If you can keep that up all season, more power to you, and it obviously will help you in your success rate. That is going to wrap it up, though, for episode 159. Todd Whitestone, thank you so much for joining us once again. Give everybody a quick shout out to your correct Twitter handle so I don't mess it up again. And anything else you have in the works?
No, that's it. It's at Telstar7. I am going to do an article Monday, as you mentioned. And this week I am looking at the top pitchers drafted in the main event. And I originally started, as you said, Adam, by saying, okay, we got a huge number of injuries in the pitchers, but that really isn't the case. As I've learned, it's more performance problems than the actual injury. So I do have a chart I'm trying to work on where I update all the top 32 main event pitchers that are drafted starters. And sort of interesting, if you want to take a look at the article on Monday, just to see that the problems are not the Shane Biebers and Spencer Striders. They are the people that are just not performing as well, at least in the early going. So that's my article for this week. And just appreciate you guys having me on. Really enjoy talking baseball with you. And hopefully I didn't upset Kevin's draft too much during the big main event day.
So I have not read the article or the draft. I'm going to guess George Kirby is a central part of that article. Hunter Brown probably makes an appearance at one point or another.
Both right.
Yeah. all right. Well, like I said, this is going to wrap it up for episode 159 of On the Wire. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. That's all spelled out. Kevin is at Hastings Kevin. Of course, follow the pod at On the Wire Pod. I'd like to once again thank our guest Todd Whitestone for joining us this week. Follow him on the Twitter at Telestar7. And after all that, I am Adam Howe. On behalf of Kevin Hastings, thanks for listening, and we bid you goodbye.